This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
We had a fantastic first hour of conversations, Paul, didn't we?
We did indeed. Thank you to all our guests, and thank you, Paul, for the news there.
Thank you, Paul.
And as always, if you want to send us a message. The text number is 0427 569 949, or you can email us on air at joy.org.au. But we've now got our next guest, Fiona.
Yes, Emma Dawson, Executive Director of Per Capita. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much. Great to be with you.
Thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it because I know that you are going to a party this afternoon. Is that right?
Got a friend's birthday. Yes.
You've got to stand up for those. Now, originally when you and I first started chatting, we were talking, and we can get to this, about the Greens and their platform of on the rental crisis. But in between now and then, of course, is the changes to the Stage 3 tax cuts have been announced. And Emma, I believe you've been advocating for some time for these tax cuts. Can you perhaps give us a rundown of what your thoughts are on the changes in policy?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. It's a massive relief this week to have seen a meaningful change to that tax package that was introduced about 5 or 6 years ago by Scott Morrison to really redistribute the benefits to low and middle income earners, to make some changes to the tax scales that will provide not just more money in the pockets of low income workers, but will give them an incentive to take on more hours. It's particularly beneficial for women in the care sector, for part-time workers. Mm-hmm. And of course, it reduces the largesse going to the very wealthy by about half in order to do that. So something I was against this tax change from day one. It was really an attack on progressive taxation to see that progressivity restored to the income tax rates, and an attempt really, I think, to do something that is not only fairer but more efficient and better for the economy as a whole is very welcome after a lot of years of hoping that they would do the right thing.
Emma, good morning. It's Paul here. Was it a surprise to you that this was announced this week?
Not completely. I had no inside information like anyone else, but I was of the view that it was becoming increasingly untenable not to take this action, particularly given the changed nature of the economy. There was never a good reason. It was never a good policy. But I think I was not surprised, but I was pleasantly surprised, but not shocked entirely, no.
So we were talking with Misha Ketchell earlier, Emma, about this very topic and whether it was good or a bad policy. But let's put that aside to one moment. The question that we were trying to discuss was, is it right for a politician to lie and then, you know, change a policy that they said they would implement?
I would start by saying I don't think the Prime Minister or the Treasurer ever did completely lie on that. I think that's a very strong word to use. And I'm against this culture that's come into our body politic of journalists trying to catch politicians out and trying to get them to make policy on the run. It's a promise that should never have been made, if indeed it was a promise. I think most of the time they were asked about this, the Prime Minister and the Treasurer said, we haven't changed our position. Now, people get annoyed with that. It's weasel words, etc. Mm-hmm. Just tell us what you mean. But I think if we were to suggest that an elected government can never make a change to the tax system without taking it to an election, mm-hmm. that's actually pretty anti-democratic. Mm-hmm. The major tool that the government has to control fiscal policy, which is one of the two big levers that manages the economy, is the tax system. And this was not introducing an entirely new tax like the GST under John Howard or the carbon tax under Julia Gillard. It was simply adjusting the tax scales, and that is core business of government. So this idea that if you don't take it to an election, you can't do it. We don't ask the Reserve Bank to go to an election every time they change interest rates, right? That's their monetary policy management tool. This is the government's fiscal management tool, and this is what we elect them to do. I think in this instance, like I said, it's not introducing an entirely new system. 85% of people will be better off. Everybody will get more money in their pocket than they did this year. And so I think this focus on whether or not it's a broken promise is not only a distraction, but it's an important conversation, but I'd come down on the other side of it, which is to say we should stop trying to get politicians to rule things in or out before an election because we elect them to govern to the circumstances. And if the circumstances change, they have to adjust accordingly, whether they've said something else 3 years ago or not.
Thank you.
Now, Emma, on another subject that you are very have written about a lot recently, so the Australian population hit 27 million this week, and apparently we are growing in numbers, the size of population of Tasmania. And, you know, the question is, from a housing and a rental crisis point of view, I mean, this kind of growth isn't sustainable, you would imagine, because we don't have enough housing. Now, you wrote recently about the Greens policy and their demands for attention to the rental market. Can you tell us what you think the Greens will be after and how they might be able to get those changes into the government?
Sure, Fiona. So I think the first thing to say is that immigration is not the main cause of the housing crisis. The housing crisis has been building for decades, and it's a series of policy failures by all sides of government over 30 years. Immigrants are ultimately good for the country. We actually need more construction workers if we're going to build more houses. So I'm not a fan of that argument that says we can't take more people. It's our responsibility to build the infrastructure. I think what we're seeing now is roughly a third of people now are renting in Australia. We have seen a marked decline of about 5 to 6% in the rate of home ownership amongst people under 40 over the last decade or so. That's significant. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it is. And so what we're seeing now is a whole group of people who may rent for life. And in Australia, we don't have a rental market that's set up to support you permanently. It's seen very much as a temporary thing that you do when you're young or between houses, but our entire system is geared towards buying a home. So we have weak protections for renters. We also have, because of the structure of our property market and the incentives through things like negative gearing and the capital gains tax for ordinary working people to put extra money into property, we have a very unbalanced market. So something like 75-80% of our landlords just own the one investment property. They're not in a position to offer longer leases or the kinds of rental arrangements that they have in European countries and America because we don't have those big institutional landlords. So renters they do, and particularly at the moment with skyrocketing rental prices, low vacancies, it's really brought a spotlight on the poor conditions of renting in Australia and that it's not a way to build a life. It's seen as something that's very much a second-class choice.
Absolutely. And the thing is that when you are renting, you are at risk. Like, you don't have any housing security because you've only got a year-long lease. The landlord can toss you out at any time. And if you want any sort of security, home ownership seems like, you know, if you could afford it, seems like a much safer option. So I guess, are we trying to secure, you know, better rights for renters?
Yeah, look, I think one of the gratifying things is we've seen over the last couple of years, particularly in Victoria and in Queensland and New South Wales is now starting to follow suit, changes to things like banning no grounds evictions. That's a really important measure because at the moment your landlord can, as you said, turf you out for any reason. That's changed in Victoria. There's still a lack of support for renters. You're not going to go through VCAT every time your rent goes up. It's much easier just to move on, even though that's difficult. We don't have, adequate regulatory structures in place. One of the big, if not the biggest challenge, is that rents and prices are set by the states. They're regulated by the state governments. There's not a lot the federal government can do in this space. They don't have power over rents. And three referenda, 1944, 1948 and 1973, all tried. Federal Labor governments tried to get that power from the states and the Australian people said, no, it's in the Constitution. So it's very, very difficult for the government to regulate the current private rental market. What the government can do is act as a player in the market and build more social housing, which, to supply and puts downward pressure on rents in the private sector too.
Emma, because I think that's the fundamental point, is that we've almost walked into this crisis over the last 30 years with our eyes closed, because what you're describing is a fundamental shift in housing and how we operate and use our housing security and our housing stock. Do you think we can actually reverse the trend, though, and try and kickstart a massive housing building program that actually takes us back off the rental drug and gives home ownership opportunities to more?
Yeah, look, I hope so. I think it's important to say we shouldn't give up on home ownership. It brings many, many good things for people, other than just an immediate roof over their heads. Like you said, that sense of security, the ability to put down roots in a community. It also leads to, you know, there's a strong correlation between owning a home and having a higher income, not the other way around. So home ownership is a good thing. What the government's doing at the moment is building a lot of social housing for public and community housing for rentals. And they're introducing into the Parliament, when they come back in February, a help to buy scheme, which will allow the government to be like a shared equity investor with you in your first home. So there's targeting both sides there, both the rental market and home ownership. We can turn it around, but it is going to take time. And one of the things that nobody seems willing to talk about is those tax concessions that really distort the investment behaviour and encourage speculation in the market. And that creates a very unstable market as well. These things take a lot of time, and we took a lot of time to get into this mess. Going to take us some time to get out. Yeah,
those areas are political hot potatoes. Emma, thank you so much. We have run out of time. Love to have you back again to talk more about these subjects, because I'm sure the Joy listeners are very keen to hear your points of view on this. Have a great week, the rest of your weekend, and thanks again.
Thanks so much. I'd love to talk to you
anytime.
Okay.
Thanks, Emma. Bye, Emma.
You're on Sustain Magazine with Paul and with Fiona this morning. Stay with us. We've got a whole lot more coming up.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.